We're holding on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, about the middle of the Amud, Amud Avuna. We looked in the Mishnah, you have the case where the Shomer has, claim that would make him potter from paying for the object that was, for the Pekodin that was deposited by him, and he said if instead he doesn't do that, if instead he goes and pays, then he's entitled to the Kefal of Tashlom Abba Chamisha that may come as a result of it. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Mashbi'in Oysa Shvur She'ena Birshusai. Actually, when the guy is saying that, even when he, Rashi explains, we're talking about even when he's paying, that this din is going to apply. There are Rishonim who explain that it means that no, not necessarily when he's going to pay, then he pays and that's that, but there are Rishonim who explain rather that the following din that we're going to learn would only be when he's going to swear. Rav Huna says, Mashviyah knows a shvur she'ena birshusai, we make him take a shvur that the object is not still in his possession. My time, a chashin shema ein of nosan ba, because otherwise we're concerned that he may have put his eyes on it. In other words, he may think to himself, you know what? So, here I have this thing as a pikodin by me, which is rare, and I can't easily get something like it someplace else. So therefore, I'll keep it for myself, and I'll claim that it was stolen, and fine, I'm gonna be paying him. I'm not a ganav, but he'll rationalize to himself like that, that he'll take it and then pay for it, rather than returning it the way he's supposed to. Therefore, we make him take a shvur that it's actually not in his possession. The Rambam actually learns, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if we're talking about something which is easily, you can easily get one like it in the marketplace, there are lots of others like it, and they're easy to get, then we don't make him take this kind of shvur, because then why would he do that? If, let's say the Pikodin was, a roll of cloth, and there are many rolls of cloth like that easily available in the marketplace, then you'd have no reason to do that. The shomer would have no reason to do that in order to keep it. He would just go and buy one for himself if that's what he wanted. He's paying the same amount anyhow. Only when we're talking about an animal or something that you can't easily find something like it. So then that's when we're talking about he'd have to swear. Okay, so the Gemara says Mesvi. The Gemara says I have a contradiction to Rav Huna. A Mishnah says in Shavuos, Hamalves Chaveira al Mashkin. If a person lent money to somebody else with a Mashkin, V'Ovid al Mashkin, and the Mashkin later on got lost or damaged or whatever, to the point where now what we have to do is we have to offset the amount of the Mashkin from the amount of the loan. Rashi points out that we have to be talking about there's a discussion in other places in Shas whether when a person lends on a mashkin, is he considered, we're going to have it later in Arma Seft actually, whether when a person lends on a mashkin, is he considered a shoma chinam or a shoma sachar? If we say that he's a shoma chinam, then no, he actually wouldn't, then we wouldn't deduct anything from the debt because of the loss of the mashkin, because after all, he's a shoma chinam, he's potter, so he'd swear that the mashkin was lost or destroyed or whatever, and that would be that. Only if we hold that he's a shomer sachar, that would be when this din would be relevant, because as a shomer sachar, he needs to pay for it. And now what we'd be saying is we deduct that from the court, we deduct the amount of that from the debt, from the loan. So you have a few different cases. The omaloi, the first case is where the malva says, sela he was sicha olav, the shekel hayashava. He says, I lent you a sela, with this thing as the mashkin, and it was worth a shekel, which is half of a sela. So one shekel, half a sela, is lost to me now because of the loss of the mashkin, but you still owe me the other half of the sela. Va'lo'oimer, the loiva says loiki, no, it's not so. Ela sela hilvisani olav, you lent me a sela with this mashkin, the sela hayashava, and the mashkin itself was worth a sela as well. So therefore, in other words, it offsets what I owe you is cancelled out by what you owe me. Potter, so now the loiva is potter from swearing a regular shavua because he's kofar hakol, and as we've learned before, kofar hakol doesn't swear when I told him. The Dirabonin doesn't have to swear. Shavuos Hesis, but our Mishnah is not talking about that because Shavuos Hesis was only the takana of that, came about only in the times of the Gemara. Second case, the Mishnah says, is Sela Hilvisicha Olav Shekel HaYashava. The Malva makes the same claim as before. I lent you a Sela, the Mashkin was worth a Shekel, therefore you still owe me one Shekel, half a Sela. V'Halo'im, the Loiva says, Loiki, it wasn't so. Ela Sela Hilvisani Olav Shlosha Dinner HaYashava. Yes, you lent me a sela. The mashkin was worth not a sela not a shekel, like you're saying, and not a selah, like in the first case, but rather it was worth 3 dinarim. There were 4 dinarim to the selah. So in other words, he's saying that, that you lent me 100, and so here you have the malva. Let's put it in modern terms then. The malva is saying that I lent you 100, the mashkin was worth 50, therefore you owe me the other 50. The loiva is saying that no, the loan was 100, the mashkin was worth 75, therefore I owe you only 25. Well then, it's a one dinner out of four, because a selah consists of 4 dinner. Well, now he's a moedim mitzvah chayev, so now he has to swear as any other moedim mitzvah were. The next case is the other way around. Selah will be sonu alof shnayim hayishava. The malva says here it's the other way around. In the third and fourth cases, it's going to be the loiva who's making the claim. The loiva says, you lent me a selah with this mashkin, but the mashkin was worth 2 sloyim. So therefore, first of all, as far as my debt to you, that's gone. But not only that, you owe me another selah because, again, you're a shomer sofer, and you would have had to pay me 2 sloyim. Meanwhile, I would have had to pay you 1 selah. So 1 selah is canceled out, but the other one you still owe me. And the malva says no. He says, I lent you a selah and the mashkin was worth a selah. Potter, so again, he's potter from a shavuos hatorah because again, he's a koi for hapo. Here, the loiva is saying you owe me a selah and the malva is saying I don't owe you anything. And there we have the concept of koi for hapo, so he's potter. And the fourth case, selah hovisani olav, shnayim hoyeshava, where again, the malva says, you lent me a selah on this mashkin, and it was worth 2. V'halo omer, and the loiva, and the malva answers back, loiki, el selah hovisicha olav, hei dinarim hayashava. So no, the malva in this case counterclaims and says that the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, which would be 1 selah plus 1 dinar. So he's claiming, I owe you 1 dinar. But no more than that, not like you're claiming that I owe you 4 dinarim, which is 1 entire selah. So chayev, so again, he's going to be chayev as a moedim mitzvah. And the Mishnah finishes off, and here's the key point that we're going to use as a contradiction against Ravuna. The Mishnah finishes off, min nishva, who is it that swears? Misha pekodin etzlai, the one by whom the pekodin is. So in a case of a loiva and a malva, then the pekodin would be located by the malva. Here we're talking about a mashkin for a debt. So therefore, the malva is the one by whom the pekodin is found. And the reason why you do that, shema yishav azeh, otherwise the loiva might swear how much it was worth, v'yotzi alos hapekodin, and then the loiva. So the loiva might swear how much it was worth, and then the malva is going to take out the pekodin and show that it's not like the loiva says. So Rashi says the result is he would passel him as an aid, because then it means that he would demonstrate in Beis Din that the guy is a liar. Where he said that the mashkin is worth X amount, and now I have it, I can bring it out and show that it's worth less than that, and therefore that the loiva is a liar and passel him for aiders in the future. So therefore we're saying that instead the malva himself should be the one to swear to the value of it, and then obviously if it's worth something different, then he's not going to take it out and passel himself. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos, point of Rabbi Natan, points out in Tosfos. I mean, that's all the more reason that the loiva should be the one to swear. He doesn't want to become posel la'edos in the future, so he's going to be very sure that whatever he's claiming is exactly so, precisely because the malva could take it out and show that he's not lying. So we don't do a takona l'ramai. We don't do something in order to fix up things for a potential cheater. And Tosfos says, what about, you might have, for example, the mashkin might go down in value, so therefore he was swearing that it was worth a certain amount and now it's worth less, but based on the continuation of the Gemara, it doesn't really work out. So Rabbi Natan likes Rabbi Hananel's explanation, which is that the Shema Yishavah Zeva Yotzi Allah's Kodin just means that it's going to come out if the Malva is able to take out the Kodin, and we can see for ourselves, based and can see for themselves, how much it's actually worth without having to require a shvua in the first place, then it comes out, basically, that there was a shvua for nothing, and it's a gnai to do that, where you could so easily figure out what the thing is worth, then we would rather do that rather than have people taking a shvua. So now, So first we have to establish which of the four cases in the Braisa is this last part about Mi Yishava, about Mi Nishva, Mi Shapukad Netzlai, which of the four cases does it refer to, and then we're going to see how on the face of it it makes a question on Ravun. So first the Gemara says, Aheya, on which part of the Mishnah is that last part talking about that the Malva should be, the Malva who's holding on to the Mashkin should be the one to swear? Ilema Asefa, are you going to say that it refers to the fourth case where we're saying that ordinarily so what are we saying over there? Obviously it can't be referring to the first and third cases because there's no Shavua over there. So it's either the second or the fourth case. So if we assume that it's referring to the fourth case, we just finished discussing the fourth case, and then the Mishnah says, by the way, it's the Malva who swears. Well, you don't need that. But typically, the Shavua got Malva. After all, anyway, even without any special takana to that effect, the Malva is going to be the one swearing. Daka Modi Mitzas Ataina, because he's the one who's Modi Mitzas. He's the one who's saying that the Pekodin was worth 5 dinarim when the other guy is claiming that it was worth 8 dinarim, 2 swarim, and therefore he's Modi Mitzas on 1 out of 4 dinarim. So, of course, he has to swear anyway, never mind the reason of Shema Yotzi Alas at Pekodin. Ela Amar Shmuel Adresha. Rather, Shmuel says that last statement in the Mishnah, Mi Nishba Zeh Shapir Kodin Etzloi, Mi Shapir Kodin Etzloi, is referring back to the Resha. And when we say Resha, Maya Resha, Sefer De Resha, meaning the second case in the Mishnah, out of the four. It can't be obviously the first case, because in the first case there's no Shavur Jaradais. So the second case was, again, where the loiva is the modu mitzvah, sela who v'sicha all of a shekel ha'yishava, the malva says, I lent you a sela and this mashkin was worth only a shekel. Now that the mashkin is lost, then I owe you only, then I would have owed you 1 shekel, but meanwhile you owe me a complete sela to pay off the other shekel. Ba'ala oimer, and the loiva says, loy ki, not so, ala sela v'sani all of a shloisha dinarim ha'yishava. He says, you lent me a sela and it was worth 3 dinarim, therefore I only owe you 1 dinar out of 4. So Chayev, then we say he's Chayev to take a shore because he's Modi Mitzas. The other guy is claiming from him 2 dinarim and he's counterclaiming and saying that I owe only 1. So he's Chayev. Now, the point is, Shmuel is saying what the Mishnah means is the shore gabi loiva. Really, ordinarily, the loiva would be the one to take a shore because he's the Modi Mitzas. But in this case, the Chachamim say it should be the Malva who swears, Shemi Yishav as ever, Yotzi Allah Sabikadin, because if the Loiva swears that it was worth X amount, then the Malva is going to bring out the Pekodin. So again, according to Rashi, the problem is he's going to show up the Loiva as a liar. Here, how could you claim this thing was worth only 3 dinarim when now we have it in front of us and we can clearly see that it's worth a complete seller of 4 dinarim? And therefore, pass them for Eidos in the future. And according to Tosfos, the vote is, why should we have the loiva swear in the first place when it would be so easy for us to go and evaluate and see how much the thing is actually worth, and rather than having him take a shavua at all? So therefore, according to either explanation, the point is, we're saying that the loiva should not be the one, that the loiva should not be the one to swear, rather the malva, the one who's holding on to the kodin, which is to say the mashkin, should be the one to swear. Now that we establish that, now that we understand what the Mishnah means, so now, the im isa lidra Rav Huna, now the question is, if what Rav Huna is saying is correct, that in all cases, when there's a mashkin, the one who's holding the mashkin, the shomer, is going to have to swear that is going to have to swear that it's not in his possession. Well then, once the malva swears that the thing is not in his possession, how would he afterwards be able to bring it out? So what does the Mishnah mean that you have a concern that the loiva may swear that the loiva may swear that's worth X amount and then the malva is going to bring it out? The Malva himself is going to have to swear, according to Rav Huna, we're concerned, Shema Ein of Nosan Ba, that he may have decided, you know what, I'd like to keep this thing for myself, and I'll just pay the guy the value that it's worth. So in that case, once he takes that kind of shura, then he's not bringing it out afterwards anyway, because he doesn't want to show himself as a liar. So according to Rav Huna, in the second case of the Mishnah, why wouldn't we have the loiva take the shvur? The loiva and the malva on the face of it are both going to be taking the shvurs. The malva that's in a bershusay, the loiva that it was worth X amount, and then that's that. The answer is, Omar Rava, Shiyesh Edim Shinisrafa. So Rava says the answer could be that we're talking about Hagos Haba adds Omer of Yosef, that Rava says it's the name of Rav Yosef. Anyway, Shiyesh Edim Shenisrafa, we're talking about where there were Edim that it was burnt. So there's Edim that it was burnt, in which case, then, so now he doesn't need to swear Shaina Bershusa anymore, because after all, we have Edim that it was burnt. So therefore, so now there's no Shavuah for the Malvit to take, that it's Shaina Bershusa. That would only be when we have reason to be concerned that he's keeping it for himself, but now obviously that's not the case. The Chiddushim HaMiyuchasim L'Ritzvah point out, to be exact, what you still could have, for example, what does it mean that there were Edim that it was burnt? You would have, for example, something along the lines of that they're saying that we saw that a beggar that had certain simonim on it was burnt, and we would assume that that's the one, that was the mashkin, even though conceivably it might have actually been a different beggar. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi Mehechim Aisala. Well, in that case, then what is the Mishnah saying in Shavuos that we said that I thought
that we were saying, well, his house got burnt. So obviously
if we say that his house got burnt, then yeah, we could say obviously that the beggar was burnt in it.
When you see a beggar coming out of fire, you can't tell what a beggar looks like already.
Right. So that the Chiddush HaMiyuchasim L'Ritzvah explained that we may be talking about over here, for example, of the Edim. It's not the guy's whole house burnt, but they were able to give aiders that we saw a beggar with such a sim and it was burnt, and we would assume that that is the one of the mashba. But the Gemara asks, Yehochi Meheicha Maisula. Okay, well, in that case, fine. The Malveh is not swearing that it's Eina Bershusa because there's no need to. But in that case, then what do we have? The Mishnah from Shavuos was saying, Shema Yotzi Allah Sapikodin, he might bring it out and show that the Loiva is a liar, according to Rashi, or there's no need for the Loiva to swear in the first case, according to Tosfos. If there's Edim that it was burnt, then there's nothing to talk about anyhow. So again, here's you have that point. It could have conceivably been a different beged, but actually the Chiddushim HaMiyuchasim L'Ritzvah explains that once we're relying on their aiders to say that we're not going to make them take the Shavuah She'ena Bershusa, then we should also rely on them that the Malveh is not going to be able to bring it out anymore. We shouldn't assume that we're referring to two different begotten. We should assume the one that they're testifying about is in fact the one from the Mashkin. So you're right, Ella Amar Rav Yosef, rather Rav Yosef answers, you have to say Shiyesh Edim Shenignava. So you could say that there were Edim, that the thing was stolen. So now he doesn't have to swear She'ena Bershusa, but the Pekodin still exists, so there's always the possibility that he may get it back and Yotzi Allah as a Pekodin. Well, we want to ask, how is he going to get it back? So Yosef Mehechim Aisala, how is he going to get it back and possibly be able to produce it in Beis Din if it was stolen? And the answer is the Tarachu Maisula. You could say when it was stolen, conceivably he might go to the Tircha of finding it. And then find who the Ganav is. Find, for example, Rashi says there were only so many people who have been going into his house for Pashtos, so it has to be. He can narrow down who it was that stole it and go and figure that out and then get it back from the Ganav. So now you can have the case. So this brings us to a possibility as follows. Now we can explain the Mishnah in Shavuos and still make it work with what Rav Huna is saying. We do make the person take a Shavuah She'ena Bershusa in case, like we're saying, he decided to keep it for himself. When there's Edim that it was stolen, then we don't have to do that because we have Edim that it was stolen. But because there's the possibility of Torah or Maisila, where he may go to the trouble of getting it back from the Ganav, therefore, you have the possibility when they come to Beis Din and the loiva swears that it was worth X amount, three dinarim, as we had in the case of the Mishnah, and then Yotzi Allah as a Pekodin, now there's the possibility he may bring out the Pekodin and show that the other guy is a liar and show that it's actually worth four dinarim, or according to Tosfos, that now that it's available, we'd rather not have the loiva take a shvua at all, and therefore that would be what the Mishnah says. So it can still work with Rav Huna's din that Mashviya knows his shvua Shein Abirshah said. Based on what we said before, that the Rambam holds, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if we're talking about something which is commonly available, then there's no Shavua She'ena Bershusa in the first place. There's no reason to suspect that he would have taken it for himself. But Pashtus, the Gemara could have given such an answer that we're talking about, that the Mashkin is something which is very commonly available. Maybe the Gemara didn't do that because we would tend to assume that the kind of mashkin that you take at the time when you borrow money, as opposed to a mashkin that you take shaloi b'shas alvah later on after the guy is defaulting, that you'll take anything that's available. But we're not talking about that kind of mashkin. We're talking about the kind that you're taking at the time of the halva, the Pashtus, I guess we could say, Balabatish, that maybe you would tend to take something that's more rare and valuable, something that the guy can't live without, rather than, for example, let's say a bolt of cloth or something like that, where, yeah, he could easily just say, you know what, fine, that's Farfala, and I'm not going to return the debt. I'll let him pay himself out of that, and I'll just go buy myself another one. Anyway. So, okay. So the Gemara says, So the question is, Yehochi kimishtaba malva nami litrach loiva v'leisi. Well, then you have to ask the question, so how does it help for the malva to be swearing that how much it was worth? Why aren't we concerned the other way around? The loiva may conceivably then figure out who the ganav was and go get it back from the ganav. Once we're saying it was stolen from the malva's house, so it's not right now in his possession anyhow, and the only question is what happens after the gneva, whether it's possible to get it back. Well, why can't it conceivably be that the loiva would then go figure out who the ganav is? He's going to bring it to Beis Din. Now, in the fourth case of the Mishnah, for example, when the malva is chayav swear that the thing is worth X amount, and he's claiming, for example, in the fourth case of the Mishnah, he was claiming that the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, which is 1 sela plus 1 dinar. Meanwhile, the loiva is claiming that it was worth 2 sloim, which is 8 dinarim, and therefore the malva is moed miktas. Why don't we have the problem the other way around? If the malva swears, the loiva may produce the pekadin, and then you have problems. So the Gemara answers, that wouldn't work. The malva knows who's coming in and out of his house, but also with Torah HaMaisila. Therefore, we can narrow down who the ganav would be, and he's more likely to be able to get it back. How would the loiva know in the first place who has gone in and out of the malva's house to the extent that we should say that he might be able to find the gun? So if we're going to be concerned about that after the gneva, he may find it, it's more likely we would be more likely to assume it would be the malva who conceivably might do that. And then after the loiva swears, he's going to produce the pekadin, much more so than the other way around, where after the malva swears in the fourth case of the Mishnah, that we should say that the loiva is going to produce it, because it's very unlikely. It's much less likely, rather, that the loiva is going to have any idea who the ganav was.
The loiva really has it, and is that, and he swears, it should tell she's also that.
No, what we're saying is, in the fourth case of the Mishnah, when the loiva is saying that, the loiva is saying the mashkin was worth twice as much as what you lent. You lent me 1 sela, the mashkin was worth 2 sloim. Now that the mashkin is lost, you malva, only 1 sela. Meanwhile, the malva is counterclaiming and saying, no, I agree that the debt is gone because the mashkin was worth more than that, but the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, not 8, as you're saying. So I only owe you 1 dinar rather than 4. That makes him more demictus. So he has to swear. So there's no way that we're going to say, that's what the Gemara is saying, there's no way that we're going to say, yeah, but if the malva swears, what happened? The loiva may then bring out the pekadin and show that he was a liar, because it's much less likely that the loiva is going to be able, if we're talking about that it was stolen, as Rabbi Yosef had explained, it's much less likely that the loiva is going to have any chance of figuring out who it was that stole it in the first place.
You can make a mistake by something worth how much.
No, so have a mistake, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, Tosfos had mentioned before, that we're not even talking about, let's say, where it went up, where it went down in value or something, because then that still doesn't work. The Gemara is saying over here, the Gemara is asking over here, if the malva swears, why can't the loiva bring it out? If it's a matter of that it might be miscalcul, even though he swore truthfully, then it comes out, if it was in fact worth, in that case, remember the loiva is claiming that it's worth more, not that it's worth less. So then obviously we can't be talking about that the malva undervalued it because since then it deteriorated, because if I care, the loiva is saying it's worth more and he can bring it out and show that it's so. Actually, so now, again, we said before, we have Rashi and Tosfos' explanations of what the problem is. Shema Yotzi Alos HaPikadin, according to Rashi, that he's going to show up the other guy as a liar, according to Tosfos, that there should be no need for a Shavua in the first place. So the Rashba points out that would actually require a slightly different Gersa in the Gemara over here, when the Gemara is saying that the loiva, conceivably, isn't there the problem that the loiva might go and find the ganav and find who it is, and we're saying that no, because the loiva is going to have no, The question is that not that the loiva might do that, but why shouldn't the loiva do that? Why shouldn't we say that the loiva should have to swear at like it would normally be in the second case of the Mishnah and make him, then therefore that'll require him to go look for the mashkin in order to be able to demonstrate that his shavua is true in order to not have to swear in the first place? And the answer is that the loiva is not likely to figure out who the ganav was. No, because the Malva will know that. The Malva knows who goes in and out of his house. The Malva. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So that's one way of understanding how that Mishnah can fit with Rav Huna's opinion. So you do make the Malva swear she'ina b'rishusay, but then in the second case of the Mishnah, normally the loiva would have to be the one who's swearing because he's the motive mitzvah, but in this case the Chachamim transfer the shvur to the Malva because of this problem, Shema Yotzi Alos of the problem, because after it was stolen, the Malva might have gotten it back from the Ganav, and now he would take it out, and again, according to Rashi, now he's showing up the loiva to be a liar and passeling him, and according to Tosfos, that it would mean the shvur should have been unnecessary in the first place. Okay. Abaya Omar, Abaya says another answer. You could say, Gzeira Shemid Yitin V'yemalai, Achashvur Mitzasiyah. You don't even have to say that we're talking about that there were Edim, that it was stolen. You might have that the Malva is going to claim, yes, originally it was lost, and therefore we went to Beis Din, and we had this whole discussion of whether it was worth 3 or 5 or 8 dinarim or whatever, but now, after you swore it, I found it. So we can say, in other words, I truly swore that Shavur Shein Abershus said, because as far as I knew at the time, it wasn't in my Rishus. But now, I found it, and therefore, now I can show that you weren't telling the truth when you said how much it was worth, or that maybe your Shavur was unnecessary in the first place. The Pnei Yeshua talks about, according to Tosfos, that if he just swears Shein Abershus, he's not going to bother really looking very much for it. He's going to figure, look, there's no real Shavuos Sheker. I thought, as far as I knew, that it's not by me. But because once we're going to make the Malva swear how much it's worth, he's going to be careful to look for it, because otherwise it's going to cause lies if he finds it. That people are going to say that he's a liar. So that gives him more of an incentive. But Pnei Yeshua explains, once you make the Malva swear, it gives him more of an incentive because he previously had to swear Shavuos Shein Abershus, because that's easy enough for him to say, look, at the time I thought I didn't have it anymore. But no, the vote is, because we make him swear the value of it, then therefore that gives him more of an incentive to look for it, in order that later on, if it's found, we don't, everybody doesn't say, oh, look at that, he swore that it was worth X amount, and now we find that it was different. So Abaye says you can do it that way, and that way you don't need Aden Bechlal, that it was stolen, and then we're saying, like Rabbi Yosef had said, and then we have to talk about that he goes and finds the gun. Rav Ashi gives another answer. Actually, when we say in the Mishnah that the loiva has to swear, and we're saying that instead we put the shavua on the malva, zen nishba, v'zen nishba. It actually means both of them are going to be taking a shavua. Zen nishba she'en b'shusay. It's true that the malva is going to be swearing, like Rav Huna said, that it's not in his rishus. V'zen nishba kama ha'yishava. The loiva is still going to have to be the one to swear how much it's worth. Rav Ashi is saying doesn't mean that we're going to take that shavua away from the loiva and impose it on the malva, like we said in all the previous answers. We still are going to make that loiva take the shavua. But for Hachi Kama, what the Mishnah means is, min nishba tchila, who's the one who takes the shavua first out of those two shavuas? In the second case of the Mishnah, where again, the malva is claiming the thing was worth a full seller, where the malva is claiming the thing was worth only a shekel, half a seller, and therefore you owe me the other half seller, and meanwhile the loiva is claiming it was worth three dinarim, three quarters of a seller, and therefore I owe you only one dinar, one fourth of a seller, then we're saying he's going to have to swear his motive mitzvah, but before he swears that shavua of motive mitzvah, we're going to make the malva swear she'ena b'rishusay. And the reason is, the Mishnah, when it says min nishba, doesn't mean who swears b'chlal. It means min nishba t'chila. Means out of the two shavuos that have to be taken by the two sides, who's swearing first? Malva nishba t'chila. It's going to be the malva who takes the shavuos first. Shami shavazev yetz alas b'kaden, because otherwise, if the loiva swears first, then the malva may bring out the b'kaden and show that he's a liar, but according to Tosfos, make it show that the shavuos was unnecessary in the first place, and therefore we make the malva swear first, and again, once he swears that it's ein b'rishus, then he's not going to bring it out afterwards because he doesn't want to show himself as a liar. So therefore, so that's so. So if he claims that it was lost, well, that's what we're saying. In other words, he's claiming that the whole case of the Mishnah was over the Mashkin, where it was lost. So the first answer was we said that it was lost. First, we tried to say lost meaning in a fire. We said that doesn't work. Then we said lost meaning to Gneva, and conceivably you could get it back from the Ganav. Then we were saying Abaya's answer is it does mean that it was lost, but now he found it. And now Rav Ashi is saying that he is saying that it was lost, and therefore we make him take a shavua she'ena birshusa. Now at that point, it doesn't even matter if he finds it afterwards. So maybe it would still matter if he finds it afterwards. That could be a problem because then he's still going to bring it out afterwards. But at least we make him swear that it's ena birshusa. Meaning in other words that he's going to have to swear that ena birshusa, and only after he swears that, then the lawyer is going to swear. There's only a certain extent we can do. I mean, we have to have a shavuah taking place over here because there is a moed mitzvah. There's only so much that we can guard against the amoyim, you know. In fact, the mitzvah points out, give the malvas shavuah is only derabanan. The rabunas shavuah, mashvirnas shavuah, shani berushosai is only derabanan. The loivas shavuah is daraisa because he's moed mitzvah. You would think shavuah daraisa should go before shavuah derabanan, and that is why the Mishnah is telling us that no, the fact is in this case, the malvas swears first because of this consideration. Yeah. So we have several answers to find for how that Mishnah would work with Rabunas. Now, the Gemara points out, Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, Meshmei de Rav Omar, this is the later Rav Huna, not the regular Rav Huna, I don't think it ever mentions his father's name in Shas. And anyway, the regular Rav Huna was a Rebbe of Rav. This Rav Huna bar Tachlifa is a Talmud of Rav. Anyway, so he says, Omar, he says, Reisha the Sefer Kyuvta Rav Huna. So far, we've been discussing the second case of the Mishnah, where the Loiva is the Moed of Mikzas, and he's the one who has to swear. And then we're talking about how that interplays with the Malvas, Shavua, She'ena Birshusay. But actually, Rav Huna bar Tachlifa points out, the third case of the Mishnah is a contradiction on Rav Huna. The third case of the Mishnah, on the face of it, there's no Shavua, because the third case was where the loiva says that the mashkin was worth 2 sloyim, meaning that therefore, since you lent me a sela to begin with, you owe me a whole nother sela for the remainder of the mashkin. And the malva is counterclaiming that no, the mashkin was worth only 1 sela, and therefore they cancel each other out, and I don't owe you anything. So there's no shavua because he's a kofa hakel. But Rav Huna bar Tachlifa is going to point out reisha the sefer kash tiyuv to Rav Huna. That third case in the Mishnah seems to be a contradiction on Rav Huna. The case was Sela Visani Olav Shtaim Hoyeshava. The loiva is saying, you lent me a Sela with this Mashkin, but the Mashkin itself was worth 2, and now that the Mashkin is lost, you owe me a whole Sela. The Malva says that no, the Mashkin was worth only a Sela, and therefore I don't owe you anything. So we said Potter, he's Potter from a Shavua. But, says Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, v'im isa l'd Rav Huna, if you're going to say that we accept Rav Huna's din, and we say that always the malva, who is the one holding on to the kodin, has to swear shavur she'ena birshusay, well then, migur de mishtaba malva she'ena birshusay, once he's already swearing that ena birshusay, l'shtaba nami, a gilgul shavur, kama hayashava, shouldn't we also include, by gilgul shavur, how much it was worth? The whole concept of Gilgul Shavua, we've learned before, we learned in Kedushin, we learned from the case of the Sota, where the Sota is only being brought to the Beis Mikdash now because her husband suspects her of being unfaithful now, but meanwhile it includes in the Shavua that she also wasn't Mizana when she was in Arusa or Shemeres Yavam, and so on and so forth. So we see from there the concept of Gilgul Shavua, and we talked about it in Masechta Kedushin. So the same thing over here. Now, Tosfos points out, the question is not really on all, the question of Rav Huna bar Tachlifa would not be on all the different explanations we said before. According to Rava and Rav Yosef's explanations that we were talking about where there's Edom that the Mashkin was burnt or stolen, and then the only problem is that he may, in the case burnt, we said it doesn't really work out at all. In the case where it was stolen, we said he might go and get it back from the Ganev. So then so according to those, then our case over here, we're not talking about since there were Edim that it was stolen, then he doesn't have to swear. Shavur Shein Bershusay, so there's no Gilgul Shavur to talk about. The question would only be on Abaya's and Rav Ashi's explanations, where we can be talking about the thing actually may still conceivably be in his possession. He's swearing Shavur Shein Bershusay, but after all, it might really be in his possession because we don't have Edim, and that's why we make him take the Shavur Shein Bershusay. Then why don't we have have Gilgal Shavua, we'll also have him swear how much it was worth. So Vim Isa, Lidur Rav Huna, Nigger the Mishtaba Malva, Shaina Birshusai, once the Malva is swearing that it's not Birshusai, Lishtaba Namiya Gilgal Shavua Kamaha Yeshava. Then with Gilgal Shavua, let him also swear how much it was worth. So why is the third case of the Mishnah saying that he's potter from swearing altogether? According to Rav Huna, he should actually be chayav to swear to the value of it once he's already swearing that it's not in his Rishus. So Rav Ashi says, generations later, I told this discussion over to my Rebbe, Rav Kahana. And he says, we're going to have to explain that the Mishnah is talking about that the Loiva believes the Malva when he says, She'ena Birshosai. So in other words, up until now, we've been saying whether the Malva is saying it's not in my Rishos, it was Ovad, and the Loiva says, I don't believe you, you're going to have to swear She'ena Birshosai. Now we're talking about, to begin with, the Loiva, when the Malva says, I lost it, then the Loiva believes them, and therefore there's no Shavua, She'ena Birshosai. Well, if there's no Shavua, She'ena Birshosai, then there's also no Shavua, how much it's worth. Because there's no Gil Rosh, there's no original Shavua. To me, Magal go on how much it's worth, and that's why the Mishnah would be saying that he's potter from swearing. Tosfos points out, now why didn't the Gemara try using this answer, earlier? So the answer is, Tosfos says, because over there, when we were talking about in the earlier case involving where the loiva would have to swear, if ma'aminoi, then there's not going to be a shavua at all. To begin with, there's really no shavua. So he could have been megalgal shavua, but that he's not concerned. He's willing to trust him to that extent to say, I'm not going to do gilgal shavua. But to prevent that there shouldn't be a shavua in the first place, that you shouldn't have to at all swear of, that you shouldn't at all have to swear of, that ain't a birshusai, then we're not going to do that. The malva is not going to swear that ain't a birshusai, and therefore that's going to prevent also the loiva from swearing how much it was worth. That is how Tosfos explains it. But here we're talking about where it would be the Malva who would have to swear, and so far he doesn't have to, because he's a Koifer Hakel, we can say that the Loiva believes him when he says it's not in his Rishus, therefore there's no Shavua on that. So the Gemara says, well, in that case, then why is there even a claim in Bastin where the Loiva is saying it was worth X amount, it was worth 2 Sloyim, and the Malva is counterclaiming if he's trusting the Malva that it's not in his Rishus, he should also trust him when he says how much it's worth. And the answer is, like Kim Levigabe, you can say the Malva may not know how much the Mashkin is worth. It doesn't belong to him, after all. It's only by him temporarily. So he never went to the trouble of figuring out how much it's actually worth. So you could say the Loiva would believe him, but he would say the Loiva would say to the Malva, look, you know, this thing has only been by you for a short time. You don't really know how much it's worth. I'm telling you how much it's worth. Okay, the Gemara asks for Nehemnim Malva the Loiva the Kim Levigabe. Well, then in that case, if we're talking about where there's a certain amount of trust between one another, and we're saying that the Loiva is willing to believe the Malva when he says it's not in his possession anymore, then why shouldn't we say by the same token the Malva will reciprocate and trust the Loiva how much it's worth? And then there's no claim and counterclaim in Basin in the first place. And the answer is Loiva Haman. We can assume that the Malva does not trust the Loiva so much. Now, why is that? What's the logic that we should say that this trust goes only in one direction? The Loiva trusts the Malva when he says it's not Birshusai and that he didn't keep it for himself, but the Malva is not trusting the Loiva how much it's worth, and therefore the Loiva is saying it's worth 2 Sloyim and the Malva is saying back it's worth only 1 Sela. And the answer is Loiva Makayim Ben Malva Tumas Yishonim Tanfen. The Loiva will think to himself that he can apply to himself the pasuk that says about the Malva, Tumas Yeshorim, the perfection of the Tzmimus of the Yeshorim, of the straight people, Tanchem will lead them in the right direction. Meaning, in other words, the Loiva is going to think to himself, if this guy was not a Neman V'Yosher, then Hashem wouldn't have made him rich. Now, obviously, it doesn't always work 100% of the time. We know there are rich Rishoyim out there, but ordinarily, we can assume that, especially this guy is not a Rosh, after all, he's willing to lend out money. So we can assume, therefore, that he has a certain yashrus, a certain tmimus to him that made it, that Hashem decided to entrust him with wealth, and therefore that I can trust him when he says, Einu Birshusai. On the other hand, Malva, Kaim Beva Loiva, Selach Bergim Yishodim, the Malva is going to apply to the Loiva, the second half of the same pasuk that says the crookedness of the Bergim, of the disloyal ones, Yishodim is going to throw them down. In other words, here this Loiva is poor and gotten down to the point where he has to borrow money. That itself shows that maybe he's not such a trustworthy person, and therefore the Eibush didn't want to entrust him with money. Therefore, he's going to say that I can't necessarily believe you when you say the Mashkin was worth X amount, and therefore I'm counterclaiming that it was worth a different amount, and then we're going to have the cases in the Mishnah when he's potter because Koifer Hakel versus when he's Chayav Shavuah because Moed Mitzvahs. Okay, so the point is, in other words, that so the bottom line is, Rav Huna's din does stand. We do say we make him take a Shavuah, Shein and Bereshosay. However, we and then we worked out various possible ways of how that interplays with the Mishnah and Shavuos with the four cases involving the Loiva and the Malva. Okay. But it is true, in other words, to go with this last point of Rav Huna bar Techlifas, it's true. If we're going to make the Malva swear, if you have a case where the Loiva doesn't trust him, that Eidah Bereshosay, and we're going to make the Malva swear, then it's true in that case he would also be swearing by Gilgul Shavuah how much it's worth. The Gemara tells a case which is going to relate back to our Mishnah. How who gavra de'afkid kefi gabi chavre? There was a person who deposited kefi for safekeeping by somebody else. Rashi translates kefi as nizamim, which means wings, or specifically a nezim sometimes means nose wings. Rabbi Hananel says that, actually Rashi himself explains elsewhere that kefi means magolius, means jewels. Whatever the case, he deposited these rings or jewels by somebody else for safety. Omalei, havli kefi, eventually the guy comes back and says, give me back my kefi, because I'm back in town, I want him back. Omalei, lo yodaina hefa usvinu. And the shomer says, I don't remember where I put it. Also, so the case came to Rav Nachman. Omalei, Rav Nachman says, Kol lo yodaina piyosihi. Whenever you say lo yodaina, I don't know where it is, and that's pshia. Zil shalim, go pay him. So you were pshia, and a shomer who's pshia is always chayev. Therefore you're chayev to pay. Actually, the Nesivus talks about it may not be a matter of pshia, it may be more a matter of mazik. And the Nesivus on Shulchan Aruch discusses the naftamina between those. So no matter what, you have to remember where they were. Actually, the Me'iri has an interesting take on it. The Me'iri says that it would have to be that he says, I don't remember whether I put them in a safe place. If he says, I remember I put them in a safe place, I just don't remember where that is right now, that would not be, the Me'iri says, that would not be the din of our Gemara over here, because then we would say, at least he knows he put it in a safe place. But the other Rishonim disagree. The Ritva says that no, even if he remembers that he put it in a safe place, he has to remember the actual place so he can give it back. Anyway, so Rav Nachman tells him, Zil Shalim, go pay. Loy Shalim, the guy did not want to pay. Also Rav Nachman, Agbela Padne Mine. So Rav Nachman went and turned, had Basin take away his mansion to pay off the debt. Kifi are worth $1 million. So Rav Nachman took his mansion, which is worth $1 million, to give it to the other guy to pay off the debt. Eventually they found the kefi, these rings or jewels of the case maybe, the iyakur, and meanwhile the value of them had gone up. So now the question is, at the time when he claimed that they didn't know where they were worth $1 million. Now they're worth $1.2 million. Who gets the extra 0.2? Who gets the extra 200,000? Do we say that the shomer has paid for them? So now we say then when they appreciated in value was in his possession, or do we say that not? Amar Rav Nachman, Hadri Kefi the Marayu, Bahadra Apad Melamara. So Rav Nachman says everything goes back to square one. Give the Kefi back to their owner. And yes, including the extra value, the shomer is not entitled to the extra value from them, and give back the mansion to the shomer, and he continues to live in it. So Omar Rava, says, Have you sitting at Tamed Rav Nachman? I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman as a Talmud when this case came up. Upirkin Hamaskid Haba, we were learning at that time Perak Hamaskid or Perak of Gemara. You see from this, by the way, that the prokim, that the names of the, at least in this example, we see that the names of the prokim then were already the same as they are now. Generally, most prokim are named after their first word, so yeah. Anyway, So I, Rava, asked Rav Nachman, what do you mean? In our Mishnah, we have the case, Shulam v'lo rotza b'shava. You have the case where he paid and didn't want to swear, and then we said he's entitled to the kefal of the Shulam Abba Hamisha. So in our case over here, the equivalent of the kefal for our purposes is the extra value that now these rings are worth, where before they were worth $1 million, and now they're 1.2 million. So why shouldn't he be entitled to that extra amount, since after all, he did pay? So that extra amount should be considered. Now, it's true, we did learn before, Tosfos points out, we did learn yesterday that there's a difference between shvach de migufa and shvach de asim alma. We said there's a difference between shvach that comes from the animal itself, for example, the wool or the babies, versus the shvach that comes from someplace else, for example, the tashlume kefal from a ganev. So okay, necessarily we have to say over here that the robber is considering that this should be considered a shvach de alma. And therefore, we should say that the owner of the rings was machna to him that potential kefal because he paid. And the Gemara says, Rava says, v'loya hadurli, so Rav Nachman did not answer him. He didn't even bother answering him. And now, when Rava tells the story over later on, he says, v'shaper ovad, v'loya hadurli. Actually, Rav Nachman was correct in not answering me. I didn't realize there's a big difference between our case involving these rings and the mansion versus the case of our Mishnah. My timer, possibly after Chayla Beidina, because in the case of our Mishnah, he wasn't Matriach, the guy to come to Beis Din to get him to pay. He said on his own, I'll be Mashalim. Okay, maybe he said, maybe he didn't actually do it yet, whatever, but at least he wasn't Matriach him to Beis Din to see to it that he pays. After Chayla Beis Din, whereas over here, it was Matriachim to come to Beis Din and to force that Beis Din, that Rav Nachman, has to go and go through the whole process to take away his mansion. So then at that point, we're not going to say that, he's machna to him anything. So in that case, it is really very different. Rabbi Akiva Eger actually points out that he could have said, for example, we said before that the point is he could have made a different claim. He could have claimed, for example, that something happened to it for which I could swear and be potter. Over here, when we're saying pshia or mazik or whatever, what kind of claim? He could say that after I didn't know where it was, but then I found it, and then there was an oinus. So therefore, he'd be able to get away, or it'd be a way to be able to make a claim that would potter him from paying, and therefore Rava thought that it should be similar to our Mishnah, but again, the answer is here, he was matriach and debased. Tosfos points out, if you even have the case that we learned in Bava Kamma, where you have a case where he did say, where he did swear in Beis Din, but then afterwards he said, you know what, after all, I'll pay, even though I'm potter as a result of my shiur, fine, there he was matriach into Beis Din, but at least eventually he paid willingly. He wouldn't even pay willingly. So therefore, so you can't say that the other guy's machna him anything, so therefore that extra value goes to the owner and not to the shrimp. So it's not like the case of our Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara asks now, we're saying that Rav Nachman had said, you give back the mansion to the original owner. Why? Lememra, the sover of Nachman, the Shuma Hoder, does that mean that Rav Nachman holds that when Beis Din has to evaluate the value of a property, a field or a mansion in this case or whatever, and take it away from one guy to pay the other, that Rav Nachman holds we can always undo that, and we're going to say, why don't we say, in other words, why can't the one who now has the mansion, the one who used to have the kepi, why can't he say, you know what, actually, I like this mansion, I've gotten comfortable living in it, why should I be required to return? And the answer is, shiny hossam, it's different in that case, the shuma betos have it. Because here, to begin with, the whole shuma was based on a mistaken assumption. The kefi were there all along, so therefore there was no, if we had known that they had been there, then we wouldn't have been taking away his mansion in the first place. So in other words, there's a case, for example, where the guy truly doesn't have what to pay with and he owes money, then we can say that a shuma would actually be considered like a sale, and once it's finished, then it's finished, and we don't have the right to tell the one who now has it, the malva, let's say, that you have to vacate it and return it to the original owner, not necessarily. But in this particular case where the whole thing was based on a toast, then we would say that. In fact, the Rashba rather discusses that conceivably you could have cases where the Shomer, for example, if he doesn't want to return the kefi, he is going to have to pay that extra value, the 200,000, let's say that it went up, he's going to have to pay it to the other guy, and then fine, he can keep the kefi and the other guy can keep the mansion. If the Shomer wants to do that, the Rashba learns he'd be able to do that. Definitely. because at this point, we would say he's already paid for the base value of the kefi by giving away his mansion, which was worth $1 million. Now the kefi are worth more. He may well say, you know what, at this point, where the kefi are worth more, fine, I'm willing to pay the extra amount, and then, and you can keep the mansion at this point, and I'll keep the kefi in there. Okay. So the Gemara says, now that we're talking about this matter of Shuma, and we're discussing whether Shuma Hadar, let's digress a little bit to talking about that. A Shuma, which is, Shuma means evaluation. So it means when Beis Din evaluates, when Beis Din says, Reuven owes Shimon X amount and he can't pay, we need to evaluate and find some property of Shimon's that's worth enough to be able to pay off the debt. We talked about these dinim more extensively in the first parak. So now what's the din later on if the guy has money to pay back? So the Gemara says, Amri Nahadori, the Chachamim of Nahadar said, Shuma Hadar Ad Shreisa Yarchei Shata. A Shuma can be, we can make him return it up to 12 months. So in other words, in a case like this, so in the case of the mansion over here, we're saying that no, because the whole thing was based on Toros. But in a regular case, let's say where Reuven borrowed X amount from Shimon, can't pay off, and therefore Beis Din gives eventually, after going through the whole process, Beis Din gives Shimon the right to take a certain property of Reuven's and keep it, and then take it over and use it to pay the debt. Well then, how dare you say, up to 12 months, we can make Shimon, if Reuven raises the money to buy it back, then we can make Shimon return it. After that, Shimon has the right to say, you know what, I like this field and I'd like to keep it, and you can take your money and buy another field or another mansion or whatever. On the other hand, Amemer says, I don't say that all Nahadori hold this way. I'm also from Nahadar. Or Svidali, Shuma Hodel Olam, I hold a Shuma can always be undone. The Hilchasan, the Halacha is in fact, Shuma Hodel Olam, it does, Mishum Shanem of Asisa Yoshavatoi. But the Pasuk says you should do what's straight and what's good, meaning, in other words, it's still, it's Yoshavatoi, that the original owner should be able to get it back whenever he's able to buy it back. So even if it's much more than 12 months, still he can say anytime he raises the money, then he can say that, that I want it back. So the Gemara continues with dinim in this regard. Pshita. Now it's obvious that if Shomul lay the Baal Chayv, this pshita is an introduction to several other questions. It's obvious that if we made a Shuma and we gave the property to the Baal Chayv, and now in turn, let's say the same thing happened with him and another person. So Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon and defaulted on the loan, and therefore we took property from Reuven and gave it to Shimon. And now Shimon does the same thing with Levi. Shimon owes money to Levi, and he had defaulted, and therefore we end up taking this property from Shimon and giving it to Levi. So now what happens if Reuven raises enough money to be able to pay off the original debt? Amin and Levi, we tell Levi, Loy Odifant, the Gavra, the Osis Mine, you're not in any stronger position than the person you bought it from. Shimon would have had to return it indefinitely because of Osis Ayashvatov, so do you. So Reuven will pay you the amount and you're required to return him the fee. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, here's another Poshita thing. Zabna, if Shimon sold the field to somebody else, Urta, or if he bequeathed it as a Yerusha to somebody else, Yahav of Vatana, or if he gave it as a gift to somebody else, Vade Hanim the Ikra, died to the Aranochus, we can be sure in all those cases the person went into the property having in mind specifically the property rather than receiving the money. The Baal Chayv, you can say, Vasisar Yoshavato, you can say, look, you know, he owed you X amount in money, fine, he has that amount in money. But here, when he sold it to somebody else, the other guy obviously doesn't want money, otherwise he would have kept his money. He definitely wants a field, so therefore we can't say Valsisai Yoshavatov. We can't say it would be a Yoshavatov for him to return the field, because on the other hand, Yoshavatov was the other way around also. He wanted Davka a field, so therefore we can't take it away. So in those cases, it's obvious that in those cases they went to take over the property and they got the one of the property. They didn't go having in mind money because they weren't in it for money in the first place. Tosfos points out we have a concept the Gemara mentions elsewhere. Ma mocha rishon l'sheni called schus shetov liyadei. We often say that when one person sells to another, he sells along with it all schus that he had. Well, if Shimon himself has to give it back because of asisai yoshavatoy, why doesn't that transfer to Levi? And the answer is because it's only based on asisai yoshavatoy. The fact is, it is a complete sale. He's even able, we don't say we deduct any amount that he ate for Paytas in between from the debt. No, we say it was a full-fledged sale because he owed him $1,000 and a field was taken that's worth $1,000. So, and the fact that he eats Paytas afterwards, it's full-fledged his, only because of Asisa Yashvatoi. So that's not the kind of thing we're going to transfer from one person to another. Next, the Gemara says, here's another din that we can say is clear. If they made a shuma for a woman, so a woman was owed money and they gave her a property. The insiva, later on she got married. And this property did not become nichset son barzel. This property remained nichset mabug. Or the other way around, where a woman was required to pay a debt that she owed, and instead of paying the debt, they took away land from her in payment for the debt. The insiva, and she got married. Umesa, and then she died. So the question is, what's the husband's role over here? Baal b'nichse ishta lekeachavi. A husband, when it comes to his wife's nechasim, when it comes to a nichse malug, is considered like a lekeach, is considered like a buyer. Loy mehadav loy mehadrinan lay. So therefore, just like we said before, that if Shimon sells the property to Levi, then we said that we can't force Levi to give it back to Reuven. The same way over here, when the husband takes over from his wife after she passes away, we say the same thing that we don't make him give back any field that she received as a shuma, and we don't and he doesn't have the right to get back any field that was taken from her as a shuma. The case where we're talking about over here, where she passed away. Now the Gemara mentions Umesa only on the second case. Does it apply to both cases as well? There's discussion among the poskim about that, whether it means that Umesa applies to both cases. In the first case, maybe we don't need to say Umesa, the husband already, because of Nichsa Malug, then the husband is already maybe considered a Lekeach even while he's alive. And the reason is the Omer of Yosef Bar Chanina, but Usha Hiskinu, when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, a few decades after the Churban, they made a takona, her Isha Shemacher, Benichse Malug, Bechaye Baila, when a woman sells some of her Nichse Malug while her husband is alive, Habal Motzi Miyada Lekuchas, the husband is able to take away that property from the Lekuchas, meaning because he himself is considered a Lekeach Rishon. He has first rights over it ahead of anybody else. So she sold the Nichsa Malug, but the husband can say, I'm the one, in effect, who bought that Nichsa Malug first, and therefore I have more rights over it than you do. So we see, in other words, that the husband is considered like a Lekeach, and therefore that would apply to our din over here. Again, we're saying that a Lekeach does not have to return a Shulma. Tosfos actually points out, to a certain extent, a husband is considered like a Yodish as well, but that's not really so significant over here. We said the din applies to Yerusha as well. Here's another case, though. The Gemara says, again, still talking about the Shuma, what happens if Shimon himself voluntarily gave it to Levi in payment of his debt? So before we were talking about where Levi had to take Shimon to Beis Din, and Beis Din ended up doing a Shuma and taking away the property from Shimon and giving it to Levi. How about, we're saying over here, Shimon owes money to Levi, he knows he doesn't have what to pay back, so he voluntarily goes over to Levi and says, you know what, I owe you X amount, I don't have what to pay, take this property in payment for it. Now the question would be, when Reuven, eventually the original Loiva, has enough money to pay back, can he go to Levi and require him to return it on the grounds of Asisa Yashvatoi? Here we have Pligibar of Acha and Ravina. Here we have Rav Acha and Ravina arguing on that. One says, yes, he has to return it, and the other one says, no. Manda amaloi hodra, the opinion that says that he doesn't have to return it, sagar, he figures, this is considered a full-fledged sale, and we just said before that a sale, Levi doesn't have to return. Because after all, he did it voluntarily. It wasn't taken away by Beis Din, so we can't call it a shuma. The one who says you do have to return it, Sava, he figures, Lois Vini Malyahu, it's not really a regular sale. The reason why he gave it to him on his own, rather than going to Beis Din, it's only because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to have to go through the whole rigmarole of Beis Din and be embarrassed in public. But it doesn't mean that it would be a regular sale. The Gemara mentions in various places that in most places where Rav Acha and Ravina argue, usually I think the rule is usually Ravina is the one who's Makel and the Halacha is like him, except for a couple of places where Rav Acha is the one who's Makel and the Halacha is like him. Here the Halacha is that we're Makel and the Halacha is Makel in favor of the buyer, that is, and we say Itaka doesn't have to return it. Okay. The Gemara says, Ume'emas ochel peri. Now, in this case of a shumah, we're saying that he is entitled to, he has the shumah, but nevertheless, we're saying that he may have to return it. If the guy raises money, at what point can he start eating peris from this karka? At what point do we consider that he owns the karka to the extent where he can eat peris? So Rabba says, once he has the adrachta, part of the process of collecting, of giving a field, a real estate or whatever in payment of a debt, is that at some point during the process, we lived in Baba Kama, 90 days, generally, you basically will write an adrachta, which is a shtar that gives the malva the right to go look for a particular property that belongs to the loiva or that the loiva had sold and is the chos of the shabbatim and collect from that. And then once he finds such a property, then they write him out a shtar tirpa and things go from there. So Rabbi is saying once the shtar adrachta is written, then already he's entitled to have payers. Nerutva points out that, what do you mean? An adrachta, he doesn't have a particular field that he found yet. How can he start eating peiros? He doesn't know which particular field he's going to get. So the Ritva says that over here, the adrachta actually means once he knows what property it is, then we give him a later document that says that property now belongs definitively to him. That would be what Rabba means over here by a shtar adrachta. Rabbi Nachman explains like that, but it means that we go through the process. We write a first adrachta. We go through the whole process of doing an auction to see who's willing to pay the most for the field. Then eventually, after all of that, we figure out the actual value based on the auction and we give it to the malva. So now at that point, we write a shtar that says that he's entitled to that. That shtar is also called an adrachta, and that's what Rabbi means. Once that shtar is written, that says
proof of ownership,
basically, yeah. Abaya Oma Edim Bachsumim Zachim Loi. Abaya says once the Edim sign the Shtar Adrachta, even before the Malva has received the Shtar yet, then already he's entitled to the payers. Rava Oma Miklish Miki Shlimu Yemeach Razda. And Rava says, you have a time in between. You have a time when they're doing that auction. You have a period when they're auctioning off the field to see who's willing to pay the most for it. So even though he already has an adrachta, but now we have to go through the whole process of an auction. So once the auction days are finished, the Gemara explains in Erchin, it would be either 30 days consecutively, or if you're doing it only on Mondays and Thursdays, that would be spread out over a period of 60 days. It's double, but it comes out as fewer days when you're announcing, because if you're doing it every day for 30 days, then it's 30 days. If you do it only on Mondays and Thursdays doing 60 days, it comes out only 18 days. But neither one works, the Gemara says in Erechin. So once that's done, then Rava says now already he's entitled to start having payers from the property. Okay. The Mishnah says, so now let's get back to dinim of shomrim. This was all a digression to talk about the dinim of shuma because we talked about it in connection with Amish. So the Mishnah says, "Asoicha pora mechaveri." A person rents a cow from somebody else to plow with it or whatever. And he went and lent it out to somebody else to use it during part of the time that he rented it. Now he's not necessarily allowed to do that because ain't a shoyo rashoy lahashoy. He's not allowed to. So here we can be talking about, for example, he did it with the permission of the original owner. Umesa kadarka, during that time it died. Now a shoyl is chayev for mesa, because a shoyl's potter is chayev even for unsin. A shoyl's potter only for mesa machas malacha. Here it's not mesa machas malacha, here it's mesa kadarka. It died while it wasn't doing the work, stand while it was sitting in the barn or something. So the shoyl is going to be chayev for that. The soicher, meanwhile, a soicher being like a shoyma sacher, in that regard, is potter for an onus like that. So therefore,
it's the last guy, second guy.
So you have like this. The cow belongs to Reuben. Shimon rented it from Reuben. Now, during the time of the rental, Shimon lent it to Levi. So Levi is now a shoyl. Now it died. So now Levi is chayev, but Shimon is potter. Because Shimon being a soicher is potter.
Because he paid rent for him.
Because he paid rent, yeah. And, he's potter for oinus. Yeah. So he shot.
What the third guy?
Because that's chayiv. He's a shoyl. Shoyl is chayiv in Torinson.
Oh, he didn't pay rent for it.
Right. So Yeshava Soicher Shemesa Kedarka. So the Soicher the socher, which is Shimon, is going to have to swear, because any time a shomer wants to claim that he's potter, he has to swear that that things actually happen as he's claiming. So he swears that Mesa Kadarka, Vashoyu, Yishalom L'Socher, and the Shoyu, then Levi is going to pay the value of the cow to Shimon. In other words, we're not going to say that the original, according to the Tanakhama, we're not going to say it goes back to Reuven, because it was Reuven's cow to begin with. We're going to say once Shimon swore that he's potter, and once Shimon swore, and therefore he's potter, in effect, we consider as though the cow belongs to him. So now, who's Levi paying? He's paying him. So Shimon, in effect, becomes the owner. Amr Rav Yossi, but Rav Yossi disagrees. It's a case of Allah, who's a spoiler before Rasa Shachaveir. How do you have Shimon doing business with Reuven's cow? The cow, after all, belongs to Reuven. How are we saying that? How are we saying that the cow now belongs to Shimon as a result of his shvur? El taksa part of the bialim. Rather, the value of the cow goes back to the original owner. Meaning, in other words, that exactly that. So Levi pays Reuven, not Shimon. Tosfos discusses why that should be so. It's not really because Reuven can say, after all, it's my cow. It's more Tosfos points out because he holds the socher is only how is the socher being coded to this animal only with the shvur, and as the Gemara is going to point out, why don't we the Reuven, the original owner, can say, you know what, never mind you and your shvur, I'm going to go and take Levi directly to Beis Din and make him pay for my cow, and I don't care about the fact that you took the shvur that you potter, that doesn't help me at all. So that would be a reason why Rabbi Yossi. So the Tanakhama is saying that yes, he's coded with the shvur, and Reuven doesn't have the ability to say otherwise, but Rabbi Yossi is saying that he does, and therefore that Shimon is out of the picture, and Reuven just takes Levi directly to Beis Din, and Levi pays him. So that's the Gemara starts out. Omalei Rabbi Idi Bar Oven, La Abaya, Mechdi, let's consider, according to the Chachamim, Socher B'mai Koni La'ai Parah, how is the Socher acquiring this Parah in the first place? The shvur, evidently through his shvur, when he swore that it died normally, then at that point was saying now that he's potter from paying, in effect he became the owner of the cow.
He didn't see it died normally.
What?
They died normally. The lady, not by Shimon. Shimon didn't see it died.
Let's say, for example, Shimon happened to be there at the time, or whatever. Let's say we have Adim. Yeah, well, no, Adim actually there wouldn't be a shvur, but whatever. Yeah. The name of a masculine socher. Look, why can't Reuven tell Shimon the socher? Dal ant the dal shvuasik. Let's take you and your shvur out of the picture. I'll just take the shoyl directly to Beis Din. In other words, you're able to swear because you're a socher. Fine, that doesn't help me at all. So shvur is not going to get me back my cow. So you stay out of the picture. I'll take Levi to Beis Din, and I'll get the amount from him. Why should we say, according to the Tanakhama, that Shimon is entitled to that payment? Omalei, so Rabbiya answers, Mi sabrat socher b'shvur de kapanila? You think that the socher is acquiring the animal only when he swears? No, mishas misa u'dekani. Actually, as soon as the animal dies, then already he's koneh. So therefore, at that point, he would be chayev to, yeah, at that point, he would be entitled to collect the value of it from Levi.
Why the skin and these things that should go to
the point is, in other words, because he's potter from paying, because once it dies, he's potter, because the socher is potter for death. So therefore, at that point, it's considered as though as soon as the thing dies, then it's considered in his rishus, because he's potter from paying for anything of it. So therefore, it's considered as though it came into his possession. You could if you want, but you're not required to. That's what we're saying. Or shvur could be the hofes dieta shabal abayis. The shvur is only there in order to make the bal abayis feel better that he should trust the shomer, that he should trust the socher, that this actually happened, and that he shouldn't say you were pesheya in it. So therefore, because after all, if it was Peshaya, he would be Chayev. So therefore, Reuven, according to the Chachamim, cannot say Dal Anta Dal Shvuasit, because the fact is that Shimon can say, even without my Shvur, technically I already own this animal as a result of it dying. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Abzera, Omim, there can be times, according to the Tanakhama, Shabbailam Shaman, Kama Poros Vasocher, there could actually be cases where the owner ends up paying the socher multiple animals, according to the Chachamim. The Ritva points out, even according to the Yossi, if he gave him permission to lend it out, then this din might also apply. Here we said in the Mishnah that we have to be talking about where he asked permission to do it, but maybe not. Actually, according to the Ritva, the vote would be, the case of the Mishnah is where he didn't give him permission to. So therefore, so, 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 therefore, so, 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 therefore, so, uh, Well, therefore we have the case. Therefore, we have the machlokas of our Mishnah whether the shomer acquires it or not, and therefore whether he's paid or whether the original owner is paid. What we're going to be talking about, Rabbi Yossi, who says how can you do schor before us or shachavera, would be where he didn't have permission. If he had permission to lend it out, then even the Ritzvah explains that even Rabbi Yossi would agree with the following scenario that Rabbi Zeva says. Suppose that Shimon rented the cow from Reuven for 100 days. Then Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, you know what, actually, I need this cow. Do me a favor, lend it to me for 90 out of the 100 days that you rented. Later on, I guess we'll figure out, we'll adjust the amounts or whatever. Meanwhile, it's going to come out, therefore, that the original owner is using it as a shoil for 90 days. You have to remember the soicher, when he paid for 100 days or when they made the agreement that he's going to, then in effect, he becomes the owner of the animal. That's why we said when it dies, it's considered his. So now, when the original owner borrows it from him, then the original owner is like a shoil to the soicher.
But giving it to him on the chesed, I'll take off the money.
If we're going to say he's going to take off the money, maybe. But let's say he's saying, do me a favor and lend it to me for 90 of the days. Then Shimon re-rented it from him for 80 days out of the 90. V'hoder shaylamine shivin yomi, and now the owner asks to borrow it for 70 of those days, or mesa, so he may shay losa, and it died during the time of the shay. So we're talking again. So
it's back and forth.
It's back and forth and back and forth, right? Reuven has a cow. Shimon rented it from him for 100 days. Now Reuven comes to Shimon and says, you know what, do me a favor and lend it to me for 90 of those days. And Shimon does that. Let's say we're saying he's not going to deduct anything from the rental. Let's say, fine, you're my good friend, fine, I'm willing to lend it to you. I don't need it for the entire 100 days necessarily. Then, during that 90 days, then Shimon comes to Reuven and says, you know what, actually, I do need it after all, rent it to me for 80 days. So now it's back as rented, but now Reuven goes and borrows it from him for 70 days out of the 80. Tosfos discusses, by the way, what would happen if, like this, we're going down a few days each time. What if instead, for example, to begin with, he rented it for 100, and then the original owner said, lend it to me for the whole 100. Don't use it, in other words, for the entire 100 days, I'd like it back. So then, would we necessarily say the same dinim over here? Actually, Tosfos talks about the 90 days. If Reuven were to say, lend it to me for 90 days, and then Shimon goes and re-rents it for the entire 90, then we would say, in other words, that completely undoes the she'ela. So therefore, that's Tosfos says, that's a possibility. That's why we have to be talking about each time it's fewer days. So now, when we have fewer and fewer days, the point is, so therefore, in effect, we have two separate schiras and two separate she'elas. So therefore, in effect, says Reb Zera, each time that the owner borrowed it, he's now a shoyl, and he's going to be responsible to pay one cow. So therefore, now if it dies during the 70 days, he's going to be chayiv two cows, because he's going to be chayiv two cows, because twice he borrowed a cow, and it died, kedarka, which a shoyl is chayiv for, therefore he's going to end up having to pay for each one. But Omalei Rav Achami Difti LeRavina, but Rav Achami Difti asked Ravina, why? Nechti Choda Pori, you consider, after all, it is one cow. Ayla V'Afka, it's going in and out. Afka M'Skiris V'Ayla V'Sheela, Afka M'Sheela V'Ayla V'Skiris. It's going back and forth from a state of Skiris to Sheela, and from Sheela to Skiris. Why should we say that it's considered a separate animal each time, to the extent where you should have to pay a separate animal for each one? So Ravina answers, if the cow actually still was alive, then sure, we could say that. But look, then he'd be potter altogether. But now he has, as it is, he has to give it to him to do 20 days of work, because he would be potter. In other words, if it was still alive, he would just tell him, okay, you have 20 days that you're able to use it now. Now that it's dead, it's not a matter of that you owe me X amount of work from the animal. Now it's a matter of you're a shoyl, and the fact is you were a shoyl twice, and you borrowed a cow twice, and therefore you should be chayev twice. So Reb Zera defends his statement and says, so not Reb Zera, this is Reb Achami Difti is pointing out the question. So Ravina is explaining to defend Reb Zera that it's different now where the animal is dead, and in fact you're talking about a matter of tashlumen. Yes, there is going to be a separate tashlumen for each time of shayla. On the other hand, Ma'abravashi disagrees with Ravina and agrees with Rav Yumi and agrees with Rav Achami Difti's point. and says, Eimoy alein al shtei paris. Actually, the socher, Shimon, is only going to be entitled to two cows, not four. We are going to say that the Sheila and the Schiros are considered separate things, but we're going to say that we're going to say there's only going to be two of them. So because Shum Sheila Achasi, the Shum Schiros Achasi, the name, the concept of Sheila is all the same. The 90 days of Sheila and the 70 days, they're both Sheila, and the same thing, the 100 and the 80 days are both Schiros. Therefore, all he owes is the Sheila. So the Balabas, the Reuven who owned the animal, is going to have to pay him one for the Sheila, because he was a Shoyl and he's chayev for, and he's chayev even for Insin. So he's going to give him one cow, which Shimon is going to keep outright in payment of the Sheila. And as far as the Schirus, as far as the one for the Schirus, Ovad Vayimei Schirus, he's going to use it to work the amount of time that was left of the Schirus, the 20 days, and then he returns it to the owner like any kind of Schirus. So is saying, not like Rav Zeira, where the owner would have to give him two cows outright and then rent him out a cow to cover all those days. No, he's saying he only has to give him one outright to cover the Sheila and then one to recover the remainder of the Schirus. Most of the Schirus, he doesn't have to, because most of the Schirus is willing to lend it out. But the remainder part of the Schirus, that was cut, the original 10 days that we went from 100 down to 90, and again from 80 to 70, those he's going to have to give him an animal to do those two brackets of 10 days of work each. He's going to have to rent him an animal for that purpose. And that's the halacha. Well, the halacha in the end, again, most of this discussion is primarily according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yossi, and the Gemara is going to end up explaining the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, then you don't really have all of this in the first place. Again, unless, as the Ritva point out, if the owner to begin with gave him permission to do all of this, then fine. So in this case, I guess, yeah, the owner himself is the one who's borrowing it, implicitly he's giving permission. So then, yes, this din might work out according to the Chachamim as well. Shabbat shalom.
Parking standard.